All right, it's 5:15. We can begin. Be'ezrat Hashem, a world to do. I wish Rav Peshel Shachter would be here, because I'm going to try to defend him today in a big machloket that went on 31, 32 years ago. First of all, today is Sunday, March 20th, 2016. We're in a big week of Marvin Besimcha, but at least at the start of the week, no one is drunk, and we can carry on. We're dealing here with a tremendous problem, and I allude to what the heart of the problem is, and we'll come back to it again. The women come along and they're demanding, and this is back in the 70s, the 80s. I don't know if today already there are problems way beyond this. Hi, Michael. Welcome back. Did the Yitz give you the sources? I gave Yitzchak, but you asked me a question about the tefillah. Yitz will give it to you. Just remind him.
Okay.
I gave him a plastic cover. What do they call those? What here in this day in America they don't have it, but here you slip it into it. Well, what's it called? Is there a Hebrew word? An English word? A sleeve. It's called a sleeve in English, but in Hebrew I don't know what it's called. Okay. Anyway. So the women want to have their own prayer groups. And the truth of the matter is that what is wrong with 10 women going to a side room of the shul and davening? Now, obviously, when women want to have their own prayer groups, it's the sign of a certain feeling, to a certain degree, a certain rebellion with the status quo. And what will the prayer groups lead to? So it's more than just a purely halachic question. And the Reb Menashe Klein got the question from a well-known lawyer in Jerusalem, Dov Frimmer, the brother of Aryeh Frimmer. And Dov and Aryeh, I believe they're both Yeshiva University graduates, they're Talmidei Chachamim. And it turns out, as we found out in the Monday class from someone who knows Aryeh Frimmer, who told him how Dov had a special relationship with Reb Menashe Klein. They lived in Brooklyn together, and he would bother Reb Menashe Klein with questions, and Reb Menashe Klein was very happy to answer him. And he gives this whole answer that, first of all, women are not chayiv to go to a daven, women don't have this chava, men have to go to shul because they're chayiv, and in the shul the shechina is found, but in the home the woman creates the shechina, and therefore she can pray at home, and even if she doesn't know Hebrew, she can pray in any language she wants, because the malachim, the shechina, you don't need malachim. Malachim only understand Hebrew. But just as in the shul you can say a prayer in Russian or in English. I heard prayers in Russia when I was in Russian for the SSSR, and I heard prayers in America for the President of the United States, Hussein Obama. I heard prayers in English. In a shul you can do that because the Shekhinah is there. Well, if the Shekhinah is in the home, the women can do it. Now, I have to admit that these ideas are nice chidushim, nice homiletics, but we're struggling with a real problem. What is wrong with women going into a side room and having their own service? He also, towards the end of the tshuva, he goes into the whole question of why women go to mikveh and they should, and why men go to mikveh erev Rosh Hashanah, erev Yom Kippur, and women should be going because they're going into the shul at that time. At least then they have to go to hear shofar. Yom Kippur, everyone wants to go to shul. And he goes into the whole question of women having to go to mikveh because they if they go into a shul already, they have to be on a higher level of Tara and Kedusha, which is exemplified by mikveh. And then at the end, he goes in and it's against the Mesorah. We're going to come back to that in great detail. And that's Reb Menashe Klein. Now, I threw out the question of women going to mikveh, that Erev Rosh Hashanah, Erev Yom Kippur. I personally have never seen that in my life. And I asked my wife's grandmother, who never went to shul, these were Hasidish people, women didn't go to shul, it was not her place in a shul. Many shtiblach even don't have place for women in Katamon, in the shtiblach. Originally the shtiblach had absolutely no place for women. In later years, pressure, the Anglos living there, So there's one minyan on Shabbos where the men daven in this room, and next to it is the Beis Medrash. No men are allowed in at that time, only women. And there's a window, and I think they open the window, and then the women can hear the davening. It's the only time that there's a place for women. Upstairs now, too, there's a new minyan, an Anglo minyan in the Shtiblach, one flight up. I can't walk it. It's too dangerous, those steps. And they, too, have a mechitza where women can feel at home. But do women go to mikveh? So my wife told me she never heard of it, she never saw it. So from all over the world, the response I basically got was that no one has yet seen crowds of women going to mikveh erev Rosh Hashanah of Yom Kippur. But however, my Talmud, Rav Yeshua Grunstein, he writes to me that in Efrat, there are women who want to go to mikveh on Yom Noroyim, and it gets involved in a tremendous problem because, and I don't want to elaborate, the whole question of women going to mikveh, and many of these women are not yet married, we come back to a famous tshuva of the Rivash. I spoke about this in the past, that we don't encourage single women to go to mikveh. The reason is obvious. God have mercy, there's an Akedat Yitzchak, I'm dealing with the Sodom Gomorrah. Again, I don't want to go off on a tangent, but a very important Akedat Yitzchak, where people suggested in the Spanish-Jewish civilization of enlightenment, we should have houses of ill repute under rabbinic supervision, because men are going to Gentile women, and they should go to Jewish women, and they should go to mikveh. And I don't have to tell you, the Akedat Yitzchak has a tremendous piece of Torah against this. I once discussed it with Mori Rebbe Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik Zatzal, and we do not want single women to go to mikveh. I don't have to elaborate, it's a chiv of the Rivash. So Rabbi Grunstein says, when this question came up in Efrat, the Rabbanim there, at least the Rabbanim who were asked, they discourage the women from going to mikveh, single girls, but yet there are people there who go to mikveh. Now, it's interesting, from the whole world, the only response I got that there are actually women going to mikveh is from Efrat. So you see, it may also be a result of the feminist movement that why should women be different than men? If men go to mikveh, Erev Rosh Hashanah, Erev Yom Kippur, why not women? It's an interesting thought. I don't know if Rav Menashe Klein was asked, but he's the one who writes that women should go. Halacha l'maisa, I stand on what I said, I've never seen it, but that's Rav Menashe Klein's tshuva. Now we come to Rav Heschel Shachter.
Women should go?
Yeah, Erev Rosh Hashanah, Erev Yom Kippur. Because they're going into the shul then, they're not just stopping at home, and they should go to mikveh.
We ended up no relevance in terms of where they are in their cycle.
So that also bothers me. How can women go to mikveh? Just the words you said. So that would imply to me it's one of the reasons this minhag never caught on, and Reb Menashe Klein may have been overstating the case. Exactly what you said, Michael. Exactly. You know what he's saying. That how can a woman go to mikveh if she's in the middle of her menstrual cycle? But they're not going L'taher et asmam l'balah, they're going for the... But you're absolutely right, you can't go to mikveh. I can understand why this has not been observed halacha l'maisa. But now I want to come to today's shir, and we come to Reb Heschel Shechter, and we're going to spend the whole shir basically on what he had to say. I have to tell you in advance, by the way, Henry Silverman sent me an email, B'yikveh Hatzon is available. Flatbush Beis Medrash, that's where Rabbi Shechter teaches every week in Midwood, has several copies for sale. I'm also pretty sure it's available from Rabbi Shechter. Pass this back to Rabbi Rubin, maybe if you want to follow further on it. Excuse me?
It's on
it's you mean it's it has been digitalized. Okay, but the people my age, very hard for us to deal with it on. I have to have something tangible. But that's my age. Now, I want to explain to you, Rabbi Shechter, and let me say a few words of background. Rabbi Heschel We grew up together. I was a Ben Biden's house, his father's shul. His father had a big shul in Philadelphia, and his father left it all to come to New York to a much smaller shul to be able to give his son and daughter a Jewish education. Rabbi Melech Schachter's wife was a very interesting lady. She was one of, I believe, four sisters raised in America. Each one married a Talmud Chacham. And
he taught
halacha. He was the only one who halacha lemaisa. I learned a great deal from him halacha lemaisa. I was very close to the family, and my brother, my younger brother, by three years, was Reb Heschel's chavruta for many, many years. Now,
where was the shul in Philadelphia?
I don't know. But it was a big shul in an area that still had Jews. It, you know, South Philly already had gone under, etc.
You know what year we're talking about?
Yeah, if you look into Washington, you'll find the exact year. Of course, when Heshi came to yeshiva, he has a big fight. In Solanta, the kids had no respect for their teachers. But there was one teacher, Mrs. Tamor, Ann Tamor. She ran a class, mathematics. In her class, you didn't open your mouth. I don't know how she did it, but these gangsters came into her class, b'dechilu urechimu. So one time my brother comes home, his teeth are like falling out, he's all pale. I say, Lenny, my brother today is Levi, but I know him as Lenny. I say, Lenny, today I call him Levi. But then, Lenny, what are you so upset about? He says to me, Ani, you don't know what happened today. I write this up in Washington. It's like a movie. What happened was Mrs. Tamor went up and down the class. Did you do your homework? What's the answer? And she gets to little Heschel, and she says, Heschel, what's the answer? And he says, I didn't do my homework. She says, what? You have the chutzpah to come to class and you didn't do your homework? Now, any other kid would have cried, would have apologized, and he says, Mrs. Tamor, my father didn't give up a big rabbinate in Philadelphia to move to New York for me to learn mathematics. He gave it up so I should learn Torah, and I was busy last night learning Torah. I had no time to do my homework. He is the first and last kid in history to speak back to Mrs. Tamor. My brother was traumatized, but that's Reb Heschel. Now, when we learned with the Rav, and let me tell you again, I want to reveal secrets because I'm like the last Mohegan of all my friends and colleagues are still alive and teaching on a level and learning on a level. I'm Modeh LaKadosh Baruch Hu. We were wise aleck kids. A kid has to be a wise aleck. So we decided, my sophomore year in college, that we know no Rebbe is good enough for us. I just finished 2 years with Reb Shmuel Lazer Volk. I mean, I had learned with Rav Bornstein, with Rav Gerelick, with Rav Fishman, with Rav Weiss, with Rav Katz. Come on. And a little smack, what, should have smacked us around. We petitioned the yeshiva that we want Rabbi Soloveitchik to give a college shiur. And believe it or not, we won. My junior year in college, the Rav is now giving two shiurim. One for the smicha classes, and one a gemara shiur, not a halacha shiur, which was open to college students. So I'm part of the original group that got in 57. You know some of the other names, Rabbi Braunspiegel, Rabbi Blau, Rabbi Weinberg, who lives in Haifa today, I haven't seen him in years, was my chavrita. There's a whole chabura of, outside of myself, bright individuals who got in their junior year in college. But when the Rav started giving shiur, some of the brighter kids who weren't officially in used to sneak in to hear the shiur. It was twice a week, and they worked it out. They snuck in. So sitting in back, if you look at the picture, I have a picture in my office that I published both in Washington and in the Rav. But I didn't identify today, but I've identified almost everyone in the picture. So if you look into the picture, you'll see his shoulder sitting in back, blocked by the people in front of him. That is a young kid, Heshi Shachter. This little blonde kid, he had blonde hair, used to sneak in. So one time after class, the Rav, in a playful mood, because the Rav traumatized us. I mean, I have to tell you, years ago in this kollel, one of the old timers of yeshiva came in to sit in my shir. Goes back many years. It was in an area that no longer exists. They rebuilt it. Yishkon, I remember it like yesterday. And he cried and he asked permission to address the class afterwards. He said, "Do you realize who your Rebbe is? What a wonderful, warm human being, his relationship with you." And then he broke down and cried, "If only the Rav would have had that relationship with us." Because when we had the Rav, you all read the memoir literature, you know what I'm talking about. That he mellowed later in life is a tragedy. Because tragic circumstances mellowed him. And for the students, it's a tragedy. Because we had the Rav, you had to shape up or ship out. Chaim Potok shipped out. That's an example. He was so frightened, he ran to the seminary. It was a big loss because he had a lot of ability. But he was frightened stiff. So one time, the Rav after Shia in a playful mood, and he knew our names, he knew us. We weren't a big crowd. We were about 25 real students registered. He said, tell me, who are the good boys in the class? And I remember we said to Rebbe, that little kid who's much younger, with the blonde hair, who sits in back, he's the top kid sitting in front of you in this room. And it was true. Reb Heschel was totally committed to Torah day and night. His mother used to cry to me, Ani, how will Heshi make a living? I'm quoting his mother talking to me. Ani, how will Heshi make a living? He's learning, he's not interested in his secular studies, and this is Reb Heschel Shachter.
How old was Reb Shachter when he was taking the shiur?
Well, if I came in my junior year in college, she had to be a senior in high school. Now remember, everyone in that shiur was either a junior, a senior, or there were a few people who were in the halacha shiur, like Barry Lieberman, a few of these Muslims that were getting smicha, they sat in two on the Gemara shiur. But Heshi was a senior in college at the most. But he had to be, because he's, let's say, 3 years younger than I am exactly. So he had to be, if I'm a junior, he had to be a senior, or in high school.
He was okay. Shlomo Wolgamo's age. They were very close.
Okay.
Shlomo?
Yeah, of course. Reb Heschel today is 75. Okay, so you can judge. I was 70. I'm 78. I'm 3 years older. My brother is 75.
That's your baby.
Baruch Hashem, compared to you, I'm a baby. Baruch Hashem. Compared to my great-grandchildren, I'm not such a baby. But okay, let's come back here. Now, Reb Heschel was very close to the Rav. And the Rav got caught up in tremendous controversies, as we will see down the line in this class. I prepared something very special because I saw that none of you knew Rav Shachter's tshuva already, so I'm going, but we'll get there. We'll get there in a few weeks' time. Maybe after Pesach already. But the Rav was caught up in tremendous controversy. And you have to understand that the feminist movement comes to the scene in the general society in the 60s and our society in the 70s. And the Rav was caught in a very difficult position. Because on one hand, the Rav was not Reb Moshe, was not Reb Aaron Cutler, was not even Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, was not Reb Yitzchak Kutner. The Rav was very much at home in Western culture. And here, anyone who was looking to innovate, to change, used the Rav as the example. Look at the Rav. Fine, there's no question that the Rav was different than Reb Chaim when it came to general culture, when it came to Zionism. The Rav was very different than his grandfather. But when it came halacha lemaisa, to practice, not the machshava, not the hashkafa, but the var Hashem zu halacha, the Rav was as medadek in mitzvot as his forebears 1,000%. And you see, this is where the problem begins. How much can you innovate? And once you start to innovate, as we all have seen, you make this innovation, a year later you make another innovation, 5 years later it's a third innovation, and before you know it, you have a new brand of Judaism, or what they call in Hebrew, a new zerim, or what they call in English with a stupid word, a new stream of Judaism. And this is a very delicate problem.
It's better than the same denomination.
The stream doesn't speak to me. Okay, a zerim is better. And for me, as my humble opinion, Rabbi Rubin has every right to disagree. Rabbi Rubin, you have to give our dear friend Michael Miller the sources I gave you for him. Remember? Okay, good.
Don't fight,
guy. No, relax. Now, Reb Heschel, who by this moment time in life, and this too is a sad story, we grow older. We never believe we're going to grow older. We never believe the world is going to change. It's a healthy defense mechanism that a human being has. The greatest example, and some of you have heard this from me many, many times, the picture that we didn't take. It's the greatest regret I have in life. I have no other regrets except the picture I didn't take. What am I talking about? The high point of the year for American Torah was the Rav Ziyotzai chair for his father, Reb Moshe. Just today, a student asked me, you asked me this morning. So about certain thing that I've spoken about, that I heard the Rev spoke about, so I told him the first time I heard it was a yardside chair in the 1950s when the Rev was absolutely at his apex. You have to understand what I'm saying.
The Madison Square Garden,
It's not Madison Square Garden. This was at the yeshiva, and 2,000 people came, which was an unbelievable number. How many from Jews were there in America in the 50s? In the 70s already, there's closed circuit TV. It goes to the base medrash. In addition to Lamport, it goes to the shul in Reuben Hall or Morgenstern. I forget already. I wasn't living there, but thousands heard the outside cheer. So the Rav, when he gave the Yahrzeit shiur, you saw his total, absolute, complete dedication to his family, to halacha, to the Lithuanian world. There was no innovation. There was no compromise. It was the Rav. But then the Yahrzeit shiur was announced for 8 o'clock at night, if I recall. Lamport Auditorium. If you walked into Lamport at 10 o'clock in the morning, hundreds and hundreds of seats were reserved. On one seat, a student left his Gemara. On another seat, a student left his jacket. On another seat, there were signs reserved for hundreds of seats. 10 o'clock in the morning, for a shiur that was going to be 8 p.m. at night. I only wish I would have had enough seichel. Take a picture of the auditorium and label it Kavod HaTorah, hours before this year. But you see, I was like everyone else. This is not going to end. The Rav is going to be here forever. I'm going to be young forever. The Rav's mind is going to work forever. By the 1970s, the Rav already was not well. He had Parkinson's diagnosed, but by the early 80s already, the Alzheimer began. At times he was with it, at times he wasn't with it. That's why I'm very makir toiva to his students who came in from other yeshivot and were all what you call charedim or black today. I'm very makir toiva to them, because they stayed with the Rav in 81 and 82 and 83 and 84 until the last year in Hanukkah of 85. I actually have the exact date when he gave the last year. I think it was the fourth night of Hanukkah, the fourth candle or day of Hanukkah. And the Rav was weakened. And a lot of the public structure or the public front was taken over by the YU Reshi Yeshiva, and no one was a more prominent spokesman than Reb Heschel Shachter. And that's why you'll see this tshuva became a watershed in the tremendous controversy that erupts over feminism. Now, this controversy continues until this very day, and to use modern Hebrew, ad va'ad b'klal. Reb Heschel, if you've spoken with feminists, he's not exactly their cup of tea. I don't want to use stronger language, but the truth is you can take what I just said to the second power. It's not just Reb Heschel, the Rosh Yeshiva NYU in general are way to the right of what's happened in the feminist movement, which leads afterwards to what they call today open orthodoxy. And Reb Heschel is the prime public image speaker that people pay attention to, either love him or dismiss him. Now, you want to know how update I am? This is from the Jewish week of 1 week ago, 2 weeks already. It's unbelievable. An article by Gary Rosenblatt, and it informs the world there is a new organization being organized, Porat, People for Orthodox Renaissance and Torah. The group will hold the first of several planned public events for the year on May 15th at Congregation Kehillat Jeshurun on the Upper East Side. A panel discussion on the future of modern Orthodoxy will feature Chaim Steinmetz, the recently appointed senior rabbi of KJ, Blue Greenberg, a writer, activist, and founder of Jewish Orthodox Feminist Association, and Benjamin Lau, rabbi of the Ramban Synagogue in Jerusalem, as well as professor, writer, lecturer, and activist on issues of halakha and social justice. And he interviews Gary Rosenblatt, Baltimore, his hometown. Excuse me?
Where is this?
In New York. Rabbi Lau, what's the problem? You can't get on a plane and go to New York this week?
No, he can. It's interesting. He doesn't feel comfortable speaking in English. He really dislikes it.
It could be he'll speak in Hebrew there.
His English is very good. His mother's English. But he just doesn't like to speak English.
His mother is English, yeah?
She's a Lunzer.
She's a Lunzer, his mother. Wow, so we're related. My cousin married a Lunzer, okay? She walked into one of the black yeshivas here in Jerusalem and asked the Rosh Yeshiva, who's the best boy? And he pointed at my cousin, and that was it. And I was at the wedding, separate seating. I couldn't get over it. Wow. Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. Now, this woman, and this is a case study going on right now. This woman, in Baltimore, there was a shul that women were allowed to dance with the Torah on Simchat Torah. They went into a separate room and they danced. Now the rabbi told them that they can no longer dance. There is too much criticism. She noted that there was a great deal of anger and resentment among the women about the decision, but no one really stood up to the rabbi to question his more stringent interpretation of Jewish law on this matter. Recognizing the woman's discontent, the rabbi asked Shaw Frank, an attorney learned in Jewish law, it's evidently a woman, strange name, Shaw, but the modern world, in Israel, everyone has a modern Israeli name. Anyone know anyone named Shaw? S-H-A-W. Sure. Anyone know? I don't know anyone either. An attorney learned in Jewish law to give a shear for the women of the congregation on Simchat Torah morning when the men dance with the Torah. She agreed out of respect for the rabbi, although she felt it was being done, quote, to keep the women busy and placate them. Sure, Frank chose to discuss issues of women and halacha. Feeling empowered by the experience, she began a weekly shiur in her home for women willing to probe sources with enormous respect for halacha and the halachic process. She later helped organize a congregation more inclusive to women. Quote, "There are many people outside of the New York area who feel frustrated and disenfranchised, as if orthodoxy has left them," said Shaw Frank, who is now the administrator of Yeshivat Maharat, the first yeshiva to ordain women as Orthodox clergy. "I think Porat can offer them a lifeline." Victoria Lindenbaum Fader, a co-founder of JCP, Jewish Community Project in Tribeca, that's part of Manhattan and an uppity part, if I'm using the right word. One second. It says she felt the responsibility to join the Parak founding group because, quote, "I'm living the benefits of those who advocated for inclusivity and tolerance within the framework of halacha." She said she constantly struggles being told what is and isn't orthodox and dealing with lines drawn rather than feeling free to discuss and debate complex religious issues. "We need a voice of moderation," she says, "and we need to make it louder." My dear students, I can assure you that in the office of Porat, there is no picture of any of the YU Rashi Yeshiva hanging on the wall. Part of the quagmire today is that we don't have anyone like the Rav. The Rav had universal acceptance, reverence, and awe. He was the Rav. Those of us who knew him intimately, like the voice you hear and like Rabbi Rubin, we stood in awe of him. When Rebbe said something, it was as if the Kohen Gadol was reading an answer from the Urim and Thummim. The Rav, we knew who his forebears were. We knew what his message was. We knew what his heart was about, what his mind was about. And I have to tell you, for me personally, he was a fabulous salvation because I learned in Lakewood and I was very happy in Lakewood. And I loved Reb Aaron Kotler and Reb Nissen Wachvogel, the Alta Mashkiach. Ach, what can I tell you? Reb Shnur Kotler, I was almost intimate. We could talk I can tell you some of my conversations with him. It's not for now, but he once said to me, "Ich gewen sehr nennt zu Hapoel Mizrachi." I was very close to Hapoel Mizrachi when he was in Israel. And I can tell you my thesis, which I've said many times, had Reb Aaron gone to Israel instead of America, Aaron Rakefit is convinced he would have become, if not a total Mizrachiite, very close to the Mizrahi world, like his entire family, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer's blessed family in Israel, Kanai Nahara, until today. But all right, he went to America and the rest is history. And we lack the Rav today. No one has that authority. Reb Heschel will say something, you know what the reaction will be. The left wing now claims they have Rabbi Avi Weiss. But more than Rav Avi Weiss, they have a professor of Talmud who's a nephew to the Av Beit Din of Satmar. No, I don't get very impressed with Satmar. All I can tell you is that 1 week ago on Shabbos, one of the Satmar Rabbeim, Aaron of New Square, held a hitva adut, a tish, a fabrengen, in Meiron. You all know about it. Satmar took over Meiron. No? Did you see the movies of the Tish? Shimon, can I ask you a simple question? How do you have movies of a Tisch done on Shabbos? Can I tell you a little story? Aaron Rakefit visited Beverly Hills quite a few times. One of the times I was there, and you know, people hear me speak during the week, and I had a big crowd, and they say, Rebbe, we must record you on Shabbos. We've arranged with the guy, the caretaker. He will record you. No? Do you know what Rakefit said? What do you think, Avraham? I said, this is not Shabbos. I said, what are we talking about? An emergency? No, it's Tzarech HaRabim. They try to sell me. Like you would call in Reb Moshe's Tshuva, if you need the heat turned on Shabbos already, the Achronim will discuss it. At the end of the Rishonic period, you find it. Reb Moshe discusses air conditioning. I said, I cannot be party to recording on Shabbos. It just goes against my sense of what Shabbat is about. No, I leave it to you to decide whether Rakefit was right or wrong. Two Friday nights ago, or one Friday night before last, Satmar had a Russian Gentile that they brought with them from America who recorded the Fabrengen on Shabbos. It is all over the internet. So the fact that Avram, I haven't said a word, I'm just telling facts. What do you want to say, my boy?
Can't you turn the camera on before Shabbat? So
it'll
just keep running and just
fill away. Tell me, Avraham, do you know what Shabbat is about?
It doesn't have to be in public, it'll be just up there on the ceiling.
With a Tzomet microphone, you know how many people have complained to me that I told them you can be Tzomet on a Tzomet microphone? But there's a Tzorech HaTzibur. You have a shul of 1,000 people. You don't see the microphone. You can't touch the microphone. You can't adjust the microphone. The waves aren't affected by your voice, but I don't know. To my way of thinking about Shabbat, based upon the Rambam and the Ramban and all that I've seen Shabbos by Jews, by Mir, by my rebellion, goes against me that they're recording a video of a Fabrengen on Shabbos Kodesh. It's enough of a problem. I've been asked 1,000 times over. I get some difficult questions. I had a very difficult question this morning. I'm beginning to fush it. Someone, a girl going in Aliyah, a woman, but they want to set her up yet. She's only going in at the start of the summer. And should she go out? But I told her, let everyone know that you're planning Aliyah. So if someone is still interested after they hear that, definitely go out. But all right, I've had some other shadows that aren't so difficult. Tell me. The internet, the greatest invention, it has changed the world, it has changed life. I regret that I should be born now, because my great-grandchildren are playing with a computer. It's unbelievable, at the age of 2 already, they're computer-wise. And I'm an ignoramus, I have to have Yomo deal with the computer for me. So Avram, I want to ask you a question. You go to the internet, you type in Yossel Rosenblatt. You're going to get Yossel Rosenblatt davening for the Amid on Shabbos, on Yontif, on Rosh Hashanah, on Yom Kippur. Are you allowed to listen? So you know what the answer is? In my humble opinion, it depends who recorded. If a Jew recorded it, absolutely not allowed to listen. You're being nener from Chilul Shabbos, even though the Chilul Shabbos was 80 years ago. If a guy recorded, but how would a guy record get into the synagogue? You understand? But you get the message. In my opinion, you can disagree with me, and you can be very happy with the faculty of Chovevei Torah and the nephew of the Avveitin of Satmar. You follow me? Open to discussion. But I'm giving you my opinion.
Why can't these recordings of records be done during the week, not on Shabbos?
Because when a person davens unetana tekev on Thursday, when Yom Kippur is Shabbos, ain't a daima. You follow me? They recorded him in the moment of emotion. You know, Moshe Aisha, you know what he used to do? And when they would mention the human being in the Netana Tekev, he would go like this. And people who had a heart, they understood what he was doing. A human being. All right, anyway.
It's probably a trivial question. But the question came up, can you watch a sporting event in Israel on Shabbos at the 8 o'clock Saturday night when the game's on at 1 o'clock and the announcer's Jewish?
Right, absolutely. Rabbi Avadia was ready to come out with a public iser, which is the only halachic answer. And they pleaded, of course, and they pleaded with him not to come out public. No one will listen to him. They'll laugh at him. So since it's only a derabbanan, it's not an issa d'oraita, he kept silent. But the problem's greater than that. If Shabbos ends at 5 to 6, and I need not tell you the first thing I do after Havdalah is turn on the news, right? Are you allowed to turn the news on? They prepared it. So I will not listen to the news right after Shabbos. If it's within 20 minutes, a half hour, I will not listen. In other words, if Shabbos ends at 5 to 6, I'll hear the news at 7. It's the same problem. These are Jews working, preparing the news. A frum guy who, a friend of mine, an admirer of mine, let me put it that way, he's one. He lived in Denver before he came in Aliyah. So he couldn't get over the Reformed Temple in Denver. Invited me to speak. So I told them that I'll speak to the brotherhood, not in the shul. It shouldn't be a shul function, but they said, fine. And I got up and spoke in Denver to the brotherhood of the big Reform synagogue. Men and women came, nice crowd. I spoke on Tarat HaMishpacha. And this person became my biggest fan. He later comes to Israel, and he's not a poor man, and he got involved. He was involved in cable TV in America. He translates it to Israel, and he asked me a simple shaila. Can you be involved with cable TV if Jews are running it on Shabbos? And I told him, I don't see a head there. And he said he asked others. No one can come up with a head there. He got out of it. He left afterwards.
What do you do with emails? That you know
we're
set on Shabbos, that you open up after Shabbos here.
I don't know how much. Personally, I'm never going to get an email. Someone called me yesterday after Shabbos, someone that lives in Queens. And I said, what, you're calling? He said, yeah, I'm calling. We're a few blocks away. But I don't know. An email, if it's a guy who senses it, what's the problem?
No, I know.
If it's a Jew.
My sister-in-law or brother.
And they're observant, not observant. Yeah, but I don't know if that's on a... I mean, there it's less than listening. In my opinion, it's less than listening to news or TV. It's an email. What's an email? All right, they're typing. It's maybe an Issa D'oraita. It's not exactly writing with the Issa D'oraita. It's with writing the hand. But okay, it's a shaila. I've never yet only seen someone discuss it.
I mean, we won't send emails Saturday night to America.
Right, I understand. Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Where do we draw the line also? Because I know that there are some charedim that don't use electricity on Shabbos in this country because it's ran by Jews.
That's the old shaila, but we already have poskim uvhakim who permit it for many reasons. Number one, the electricity, the whole chashmal is interconnected. You can't separate the army and the hospitals from the electricity. Once it runs from the army and hospitals, it has to run for everyone. That's number one. Number two, today it's almost entirely automatic. The only time you need someone to touch it is if there is a breakdown in the system. So at that point, it's pikuach nefesh many times over because hospitals and the army, everyone's involved. So halacha l'maisa, you can use the electricity. It's not a shaila. In Bnei Brak, they're machmir, all right, that's the chazon ish, but that's a chumrah. It's not me'ikar hadin. Okay, gentlemen, with all this being said, this problem haunted us in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s. And with the formation of Porat, it's going to continue to haunt us. Now, I want to... Let me do a passion. Yeah, what's...
Now, you were talking about Rav Soloveitchik's background and family.
Right.
Florence Nightingale, you've heard the famous...
Yeah, person. Of course.
Her name was Soloveitchik.
She was Caesar Soloveitchik.
Yeah.
But was she Jewish?
I don't know.
I don't think she was Jewish. Nightingale is a... And Nightingale is Soloveitchik. Interesting, yes. So it has to be checked out.
No, I just think you mentioned it earlier.
Who her descendants are. Okay. I'm now quoting, I'm now coming into the heart of the tshuva, and again, I have to tell you in advance, you're trying to understand why you are against women forming a separate prayer group. Basically, there is no black and white halacha against it, as we all know, and we'll come to that. Biyikvei Hatzon, by Rav Tzvi Shach, published originally in 1997, I'm quoting from Simon Hay. So first of all, we started last week, he develops an idea that is the exact opposite of Reb Menashe Klein. Reb Menashe Klein said women are not obligated in prayer, period. Therefore, they don't have to go to shul. Rav Heshel Schechter says if they don't go to shul, they have a total, complete kiyum. They are lacking it because they don't have a minyan. And part of being Yotzei Davening is Kaddish, Kedusha, Chasarat Hashatz, Kriyat HaTorah with Barchu, which women cannot do. So he takes a point of view that if they're not part of the regular minyan, they are lacking the chiyuv, the fulfillment of the chiyuv of davening. I have to say on that issue, probably Reb Menashe Klein is right. It's very hard to say that women have the same obligation of davening like men do. Mitzvah taseh shezman grama, all of tefillah is based upon time elements. And even the rishonim that say women have to daven the oraita, but everyone agrees that it's only a brief prayer. It doesn't have to be the type of prayer that men have. So, but it's interesting, they both begin their tshuvot on two totally different parameters. Reb Menashe Klein, not chayav at all. Reb Heshel Schechter, kinireh, totally chayav. Then we went into the whole question of what represents the Torah, what is correct, what is honest. And Reb Heshel felt very openly that if you take this point of view with women and what the women want to do, what the women want to innovate, it is falsifying the Torah. There's also the problem that if you separate, and this is more or less where we left off last week, that if you separate, you wind up harming the synagogue. Part of the concept of a synagogue is Barov Am Hadrat Melech. We just had a discussion in my house with women reading for women, which basically is Mutta Meikra Hadin. There are very few poskim in the world who will tell you it's not correct. So women reading for women. But the problem is when women read for women, so what do? You go into a private house. There was just a question here in a community where I have children living. And the Rabbi Paskin, exactly what the Rav Paskin, the famous story, I can tell you the story. It's a well-known story. I believe the story goes as follows. The ideas I know absolutely, but maybe the facts I have a little bit mixed up. But as I recall, Nathan Lewin, the famous lawyer, is married to a Gordon. His wife is from a very chashuva rabbinic family, big Talmid Chachamim. And she's a feminist. And her daughter, their two daughters, one daughter wants to read the Megillah. So, for women. So I believe Nat Lewin called the Rabbi J.J. Schachter. Rabbi J.J. Schachter called the Rav. And the Rav said, have Nat call me. He knows Nat Lewin wants to, it's no secret who Nat Lewin's father was, and the Rav knows the family. So Nat Lewin calls the Rav, and the Rav says, this is what I'm told, the Rav says to Nat Lewin, Nat, you have a nice house with a big living room? He says, yes. That's where your daughter should read the Megillah for the women. So the rabbi in this area in Jerusalem, not far from you, said, fine, a woman can read for women, but it has to be in a private house. All right, fine. So you do in a private house, you pull the women away from the Rovam Hadratach, and Purim, because of the nace, there's a special obligation that you have to have the Rovam Hadrat Melech. Now, then Reb Heshel goes off and very strongly, and here's where the Porat women and the Jofa women and the innovators of the 70s were furious with him, and he was viciously attacked. But he says, why do women want to do this? This makes them feel good. that they're also important like men. And he says, this is what the feminist movement began in America. They want to turn women into men, men into women, breaking down all barriers. And here he quotes in Yiddish, in it's not translated, it's in Yiddish. And you all know what the Torah has to say. He quotes for Baruch Ber, it is for Reuben Grzybowski, that self calls self. You can have all the theories in the world. Aber min daf sein, min daf zu trachten normal. That with all the theories in the world, you have to think in a normal fashion. By the way, this is what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky said in relation to Chumras, that when the Chumras began, you know, when everyone talks about the Chumras, the Chumras, the Chumras, I have my own family, people who hold 72 minutes. When I was growing up, no one held 72 minutes. The Rav held 96 minutes, where they would say, the Rav, but the world, Chabad, everyone held for 42, 46 minutes. And you never saw a calendar with Shitat Rabbeinu Tam. Today you see calendars, the normal Motzei Shabbat and Shitat Rabbeinu Tam. And he says, yeah, Rav Yaakov Kamen says, Chumras are very nice. Of a medaf leben normal, a person has to live in a normal fashion. Say that, say that, you wish. Yomo, I haven't said a word yet. Yeah, what's up?
What does it mean to be normal? Who defines what normal is?
Yomo, you're
like the Oracle of Delphi. You can define that any way you wish.
No, they're right. I'll answer your regular chat because I want to do the shiva. You see, normal doesn't mean we all have to be exactly the same. There's a sticker going around now, achdut, lo achidut. We have to be a unity with the Jewish people. But doesn't mean we all have to think the same. So there's a certain realm of normalcy. You want to know what normalcy is? I hope a student is married by the time he's 25 today. Okay, I hope a student has his bachelor's and his smicha and his master's and he's on his way to his doctorate. I'm a Talmud of the Rav. Remember, the Rav said to Abba Brunschwigel spoke over that in public at the Shloshim. The Rav told him, Abba, you should get a doctorate, you understand? Could you picture, Abba, those of you who know Rav Abba Brunschwigel, could you picture him in Bernard Rebel graduate school dealing with the scientific approach to Gemara? But the Rav told him, you should get a doctorate.
Maybe did the Rav tell
Rav
Schachter to get a doctorate?
I'll tell you. The Rav, he loved Rav Heschel and he acknowledged he's one of his greatest students ever. But at times the Rav felt he was a little bit too, you know, I don't know, what word should I use? A little bit too in Hashkafa, you know, outside the realm of the beauty of the Western world. Rav Heschel has a master's in mathematics. But that was done, you know, to please his mother, his father, to graduate the yeshiva. You had to have a master's in my time. I wound up with two masters, you should know, because I didn't know what the word protexia means. So when they required that master's in Hebrew literature, I was interested in Jewish history. So I should have said, look, I'd like a waiver on the Hebrew literature. I'm interested in Jewish history. I did two masters. I have a master's in Hebrew literature and a master's in Jewish history. But Herbie, you want to know something? I made a lot of money out of those two masters. Do you know why? Yitzchak, tell him, Keful Toarim. There's a rule in Israel, if you have 2 degrees the same, you get more money. Every month, from the day I've come in Aliyah, I get more money because I have Keful Toarim. All right, it's another 50 shekel a month, but after from 69 to 2016, it adds up. Anyway, and then it's the famous quote from Rav Baruch Ber that his son-in-law spoke about, and then Rav Heschel quotes it, that it's not you have the right to think. You have to know what the Torah wants. Then you adjust your thinking to the Torah. Not you think what you want, and then you want to adjust the Torah to your thinking. And you see there, you can see what Rabbi Heschel is saying here. But then it gets much more stringent. Listen to this carefully. He says, what is feminism? What does feminism want? All right, women or chveis were held second-rate citizens. Women weren't allowed to smoke in public. I mean, think for women didn't have the right to vote. And as I told Avraham last week, remember, Rav Kook was against women voting. Do you understand what I'm saying? Rav Kook, Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kook. Today in Agudat Yisrael, they plead with every woman to go and vote. And when those women organized their own party, they were furious at them because the few thousand votes they got, they took away from Agudat Yisrael. And my own, this is where I basically disagree with the thinking of Sirif Pekuda. You must work within the system. You must work within the system. We're Jews, otherwise we'll kill each other, you understand? Each one thinks he's smart enough. Could you imagine you kill the prime minister? I mean, what are you talking about? There's Dinei Nefashot, there's no Sanhedrin. Who kills? What Beit Din? Who gives you the right? And we differ. That Yitzhak Rabin, I may look back and consider what he did, total rishit, how many lives he destroyed. But you have to work within the system. Otherwise, there is anarchy here. So, all right, the woman says, we don't need that. Rabbi Eshel says, we don't need that in Judaism. Because women have always been respected, honored, and treated on a pedestal. And here, Shimon, let me tell you something. When I am a Sadi Kedusha, and I'm filling in the Ketuvah, someone once came from a yeshiva in the old city of Rav, and he saw what I do. He was like blown away. I said, look, a wedding is not a joke. The Chatan has to know what he's doing. So I have the Chatan read the Ketuvah. And if he understands Aramaic, it's one thing. If he doesn't, I translate. I said, do you know what you're reading? Remember, Glima di al katfai, you are obligated to your wife, the shirt on your back. You're obligated to her with money. Bein b'chayai, bein batachayai, le'acham moti. What the Ketuvah says, it's frightening. No? And remember, this was a period where women didn't work. Women were second rate, they couldn't leave the house. You know what the Rambam Paskins, we've quoted it once, twice a month, that's all. Today you have women, they make more than the husbands, right? I have one grandson, he's working on his master's, he's already on the way to a doctorate, two masters, a doctorate. His wife supports him, she already has many degrees. Which she's a lawyer, she has a master's in Jewish philosophy, but she works in law. Today, women, but imagine what two children, yeah. my daughter and son-in-law work very hard, taking care. Can I inherit, have another granddaughter-in-law getting a doctorate in Hebrew in science and biochemistry, whatever? We punish Shalom. I don't want to go any further. I have more and more and more. Can I inherit? And they're all good kids. So it's but imagine the Ketuvah, what you obligate yourself to a total stranger. Yomo and Natan, when you will obligate the shirt on your back to a total stranger, I will be very, very happy. So number one, then he goes even further. He says, but it's not just the shibudim a husband has to his wife. And we find in the Tanakh and in Shas, women are held to be smarter than men. And the Tanakh, Devorah, Esther HaMalka, Devorah HaNeviah, Sarah Imeinu, Shema B'kol Sarah, Ishtecha. I don't have to tell you, I told you more than once in the Mossad. When we had to make very important decisions about what's going on in Moscow, Leningrad, etc., what we're sending, what we're requiring, what we want to do, what we want to accomplish. And my wife and I would differ. Arye Kroll, Zeichel Tzadik Levracha, the head of the division, who led against Pras Yisrael, and I've told you 1,000 times over, they're the most two important people in my life, were Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik and Arye Kroll. And Arye would say to me, Harav Rav Kesset! Tishma b'kol ha'isha, k'mo shakadosh baruch hu b'ma, b'nogei el'sara yimeinu. And yet, when I finally met Aryeh's wife, I understood already where we're coming from. Aryeh's wife, when Aryeh retired from the Mossad, there was a big, big party. I was the only one non-employee of the Mossad who spoke. Everyone else was. I saw all the people that I met over the years. I wasn't allowed to tell anyone where they were. Everyone was together. And I was the only, my speech, I can tell you afterwards for another time. But Aryeh Kroll's wife spoke. She got up, this lady that Aryeh always spoke about her, his wife, Ishti, and she gave a talk on the level of Nechama Leibovich. I couldn't believe my ears. She was 100 times more the Talmidah Chachama than Aryeh Kroll was. And then I found out she was the head of Torah Shebal Peh in the Mamlachti Dati high schools in the whole Be'er Sheva and southern area. They were kibbutznikim, they were from Kibbutz Sad. But Aryeh lived in Tel Aviv all week to be near the center. He just went home for Shabbat. So Reb Heschel is right, the way we treat women. But more than that, this is Reb Heschel speaking now. No, when was your bar mitzvah? What do you say? Giddy, how old were you when you were bar mitzvah? 13 years. Tell me, your kid sister, how old was she when she was bat mitzvah?
I don't have one, but 12.
12. And Reb Heschel says, this is the Gemara Nida that I always quote. One, there's someone listening to the shiur that gets upset with me. He feels women, he argues with me. All right, he's entitled to his opinion. He doesn't like the fact I put women on the pedestal. But the Gemara says it. Nu, bina yitera binashim.
You have daughters, don't you?
Women have more insight than men, period. And he said, and he goes on and on and on that if this is the case, then why do we need a feminist movement? This whole women's liberation is not for Jews. Now, I need not tell you, the Jaffa people argued with this. Oh, what they did to Reb Heschel. But this is Reb Heschel speaking, Jewish Orthodox Feminist Association. Today, it's the new organization is Porat, which I spoke about at the start of class, People for Orthodox Renaissance and Torah. And it's to support Chovevei Torah and the whole new movement that has developed, the Yeshiva Marat, to turn out women. It's a new, in my opinion, a new branch of Judaism, and nothing will stop it. Because in my life, I've spoken, probably over a million people over the world have heard me over the generations. Never did anyone walk out on me. Twice, women walked out on me in recent years, the last 15 years, I would say. Twice, three women walked out, once two and once one, because I spoke against some of the extremes of Chovevei Torah and women, and partnership minyanim, and I explained that this we can't condone halachically, and they walked out in anger. And what Blue Greenberg started, if there's a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way. You don't know how many people believe that. Someone just said to me, "Why can't we solve the problem of goodness?" And I said, "Who are you talking to? How do you say?" And he quotes Blue Greenberg. I said, how do you talk like that? Rabbanim were meisa nefesh to help women. But we have a halachic system. We have to work. I can't lecture on it now. I trust you've read Rakaf and Aram, my writings from Rabbi Yitzchok Hanan Spector. I trust you've read from Washington to Washington about a guy named Rakefet and what he did for an aguna who wasn't even related to him, who he met once for 2 minutes to get her signature to empower Dov Rimmer to represent her in the rabbinic courts. So how do you say things like that? If there's a rabbinic will, there's halachic way. No, I want to eat chaza. Can I eat chaza? I want to read the clay shellfish. Can I eat shellfish? I want to read on Yom Kippur. Can I eat on Yom Kippur? I'm sick and tired of hearing the Megillah. Do we have a halacha? We don't have a halacha. No, I wake up in the morning. I'm the happiest person alive. Modani lefanecha. Reshit chachma. After I wash my hands. I run to daven. I put on the tefillin. Oh, what a schut to put on tefillin. And Minashemayim Zikuni, remember what I told you. I never missed a day of tefillin in my life. You understand that, Shimon? I lost my lam. I'm a yatom. No, how can that be? My mother died Cholamayit. My father died Chol HaMoed Sukkos, and my mother died at 7 a.m. I davened 5:30, my brother davened at 6. So my brother in America, the minute we called him, we told him, tomorrow morning when you wake up, you don't put on tefillin. We reminded him, you're an avel. And it's mamish avelut, the Yom Rishon, with the patira and with the kfura. There's no machloket at all.
He was an onan.
You don't put on. Well, he's not an onan. Well, my brother and I were onaning him. But we were, my brother in America had nothing to do. It's a machloket sapaiskim. Again, everything you touch upon, I've given shayurim, but it's not for now. What? The first, of course. Just the first day you don't put on. The whole Shiva, it's just the first day. Check it out. And even the first day, it's a whole machloket. What if the death was a day earlier? You follow? If the kfur is not the same day. I know they buried from America right now, my Talmidim, very big Talmidim, the whole Zeh family. So I believe after the funeral, they did put on tefillin. Because, without a bracha. Because it's mamish machloikas achrayim. They followed, they went home and they put on tefillin, said Shema, because Meikir Hadin could be Yechayev, because it's not the same day as the Ptira. Ptira was 2 days earlier, basically. Okay. Then Rav Heschel has to deal with a very basic problem that he struggles with. We'll come to it where the Rav struggles with it. I'm actually going to bring the Rav into Shir. I'm going to do the Rav word by word, but that's a few weeks from now. And Nu asked the obvious question. There's a very basic question here. Rabbi Shachter, you're opposed to innovation. Rabbi Klein, you're opposed to innovation. Don't we have innovation in halacha? Tell me, Michael, what are you going to do in a few weeks from now? You're going to have the rabbi sell your chametz to a guy. You're going to make the rabbi a shliach. You're going to get into a lot of trouble in the shliach when you go to Rabbi Chadad and Ani Run, Rabbi Run sees you going to him. He's going to chop your head off. Last year he chopped my head off. So, but nevertheless, we're going to sell chametz. Giri, in the Gemara, did they sell their chametz? That's an interesting question. What's going on here? All right, Yomo has a time machine. He can go back in time. So he, Taka, goes back, and he doesn't sell. He gives it to the guy a gift. All right, fine. Today, we sell our chametz. We don't budge.
Rabbi Haddad has nine kids.
What did you say?
Rabbi Haddad has nine kids.
Please, kind, don't get me started, and I don't want the microphone to pick up. All I can tell you is he would have made a very good Chaver Knesset. He was number 10 on the Agudat Yisrael list. You know why. Most of them rob only after they're elected. I don't want to finish the sentence. Zomun Zanke Zomun. Back here. Nine kids. You go to work. You should have a PhD. Make a living and have time to learn. Shaya. Of course there's Chiddush in Halacha. Today, you have liquor in your house. I have liquor. I don't drink. I don't know why I don't drink, but I don't drink. I have liquor. I brought with me from 69. I have an unopened bottle of rye.
You should know. One should, they don't sell. The
rye. So you should know. You sell to a guy. The liquor doesn't move. All right, it could be liquor is a poor example. Because it's tarovet. It's tarovet. Tarovet. I asked the Rav. The Rav said, the whiskey you can sell. But people, I saw frum Jews with bread in their freezer. I don't sell chametz ban. I have to finish. I have to get rid of it. I said, okay. So what? There's no halachic process? There aren't innovations? This is a very basic question. And you, as a student said to me, I quote, Rebbe, you've made your peace with women learning Torah. You taught Torah in Michlala. I taught there for 15 years. Machon Gold, 18 years. Midreshet Moreya, 15 years. You taught Torah to women? Just as you made your peace with teaching Torah to women, you will make your peace with women being Shluchat Sibur and reading the Torah. He told me that. innovation.
What's
it? A Talmud. Talmud.
Your Talmud.
My Talmud. Rabbi Lichtenstein's Talmud. What do you think? That Chovei Beit Torah grew up with outsiders? And that he helped cut out in this very color. Rabbi Linzer is a Talmud of Rabbi Lichtenstein. Learned a number of years, many years in a Lunchfoot. You follow? These aren't... Solomon Schechter? What's his Hebrew name? Shnur Zalman, what does that tell you? Came from a Chabad Chai, sein Tatis given a Shai, his father was a Shaykh. You follow?
Mordechai Kaplan is the oldest Mismach in YU, you know?
Who?
Mordechai Kaplan is the oldest.
Mordechai Kaplan studied in Yeshivas, Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan. In my time, they were looking for the oldest graduate, like the oldest man is getting a lot of publicity from Haifa, a Jew who puts on tefillin every day. How old is he? 112 years old. And, oh, what went on? A whole son. He's with it. And what a family he has. He's a survivor.
His
first family wiped out in the Holocaust. Remarried, had two children and endless grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-great. What an individual. Okay. Why did you get involved with...
Mordechai Kaplan was the oldest.
So they were looking for the oldest graduate. And it is in the fifth... Do you remember this? It's before your time. You went to New York yet. And who do you think the oldest graduate, Mordechai? They were caught in and then they had a miracle... They found an old man with dementia, senility, in an old age home, and he was 2 years older than Mordechai Kaplan. Oh, did they breathe easy? They spoke about him, honored him, listen, this is the reality, gentlemen. How do you deal with this problem? This is a very, very valid problem.
Question. His criticism of feminism.
Please, Yitzchak, you're entitled to your opinion, but let me explain Reb Heschel. Let me go one step further. And he says openly, writes openly, yes, there's definitely chidush within the halacha. The questions of 1985 are not the questions of 1975. And he says, absolutely. You see in science there are changes. And you see in halacha there is a whole historic process, I would use the word. And he quotes Reb Chaim Voloshin that the greatest joy that a Talmud has is being mechadesh, innovating. Coming up with a new idea. But he says, yes, coming up with a new idea, but it has to be within the halachic framework. And see, this is a theme that Reb Heschel picked up from the Rav. It's a theme that all of us should be sensitized to. Torah does not stand still. The halacha had to be oral. There had to be a Torah Shebaal Peh because there are endless questions that come up. You heard the question that Michael asked. I never even thought of it. Getting an email on Shabbos that a Jew typed in, punched into the computer on Shabbos. Of course, there are all types of questions that come up. You have a Torah Shebaal Peh. You have to be able to answer in accordance with the Torah Shebaal Peh. But you have to be kulo l'shem shamayim. This is not something that people can do for their own personal interest and advantage. And he quotes the Gemara, that call Yumasov L'Shem Shemayim. And he gives an example. And it's a very powerful example. Tell me, we have death penalties, we have Malkot, we have all types of Halachot. Yet the Gemara says twice in Shas, Sanhedrin, and in Yevamot, as I recall, and I'll quote the Gemara, Makin V'Onshin Shalom Min Hadin. What does that mean? That at times the Rabbanim, the Sanhedrin, the Beit HaGadol feel you have to establish the law. The example they give in the Gemara is someone who was riding a behema on Shabbos and picking chveis flowers from the trees. They executed him for Chilul Shabbos. Why? Because there was a total breakdown of Shabbos at that time. In the United States, the Gemara gives this example, but it shows you nothing has changed. A man and a woman had relations in the park, in public. They were married. What did they do wrong? They flogged them. They gave them mankat. That is so indecent, so indecorous. This is the world today.
Where did that happen?
Excuse me?
Where did that happen?
It doesn't say. It says in the park. It's a Gemara.
Someone,
but all I can tell you is, you go to any movie today, you go to a nightclub in Tel Aviv. Wasn't there a case just a few months ago where they got this woman drunk and in public? I don't want to go any further. On the table, I think it was Friday night, North Tel Aviv, whole investigation. No charges were pressed because it seems it was consensual. Look where we're at. But in order to act, you have to act l'shem shamayim. And you can't, this is not the masses, not the hordes, not the populace. This has to be Gedolei Yisrael. And if you've seen Gedolei Yisrael up close, believe me, the description l'shem shamayim is 100% correct. But here he gives an example that the Rav quoted time and again. And it's an example that all of you know. The Gemara in Bracha, Taf Chav Chet, Amit Bet, Shimon HaFakuli, Histir Yud Chet Bracha, Lifnei Rabbi Gamliel HaSeid B'Yavna. And the whole Shimon Esrei that we say, who organized it? Who put it together? But wait a minute. They're not just 18 brachot. How many do we have in Shmon Esrei during the week? 19. What's the 19th bracha? Was added later. The Jews had so much tzaris. It's not only today. The Jews had minim, apikrusim, people who wanted to run away, people who denied Torah, people who denied Zionism, call it what you wish, and they were suffering Chilul Shabbos. It could also be some of these people were Christians, Jews who became Christians, and they looked around for someone who could write the text of a bracha against these people. And they tell us Shmuel HaKatan was the one they found who could write L'malshinim al tehi tikva, v'kol harisha kareget tomved. Wow, Shmuel HaKatan. And all the Rabbanim ask, the Rav quotes here Rav Kook, he quotes Reb Cheskel Kalish, he was the Reb Cheskel Lifshitz, the Kalish Rav. These were, you know, Rav Kook, you all know, Reb Cheskel Lifshitz was HaMedrash v'HaMasa. That was the Drush volume that Reb Chaim on his, that they say on his table, on his desk when he died, they found the Shas, a set of Rambam, the Shita Mekubet set, and the Medrash V'Hamaaseh. A lot of the Rav's Dashanut comes from a sentence in the Medrash V'Hamaaseh. The Rav turned it into a two-hour drasha. And the Rav quotes them. I always quoted the Rav. I didn't know the Rav was quoting others, but Heschel says here, Rav Heschel says, he's quoting Rav Kook and Rav Cheskel Lifshitz, that why did they find Shmuel HaKatan? Because he was totally without prejudice. He's the person who stated in Pirkei Avot, Bin Tfala Yevecha Al Tismach. There was no personal, subjective feeling in him. And that's why he wrote it. It's not the masses, not the hordes. It's not a democracy. And I can tell you something that many of you don't know, and we tend to forget. In Rakepet's opinion, the high point of the Rav's dashanut, homiletics, it's overwhelming, his chesed for Reb Chaim Heller. Remember, we spoke about this. Rabbi Lichtenstein disagrees with me. He felt the chesed given a few months later, or was it a few months early, I forget already, for the Brisk Rav. No, the Brisk of Rav was a few months later, if I'm not mistaken. They were given within a few months of each other. The chesed on Reb Chaim Heller was given before the Rav had his major operation, and the chesed on the Brisk of Rav was given, or that the chesed on Brisk of Rav was given the night before he had to go into the hospital for the operation. So it could be Reb Chaim Heller's chesed was a few months later when he recovered. You have to check it out. But they're right next to each other, 59, 60. So Rabban Lichtenstein considered the chesed on the Brisk of Rav the greatest. It's unbelievable, but it's limited to Brisk. The chesed on Reb Chaim Heller is what Yiddishkeit is all about. Tell me, what name do you see today that chesed is called? No? It's called by the catchwords of the heart of the chesed. Pleitat Sofrehim. That's what it's called. Chesed for Reb Chaim Heller, Pleitat Sofrehim. You know what the Rav called it originally when it was first published in Hadoah and the Rav submitted the manuscript to them? I have the original copy. Shmuel HaKatan Shel Doreinu. That the Rav gave Reb Chaim Heller the highest compliment. Shmuel HaKatan Shel Doreinu. There was no personal gain, feeling, prejudice in Reb Chaim Heller. Yeah, Vada Gedolim got involved in it. You know, we get involved in modern times. The famous story of, I told it, I think, in the other class, of Reb Aaron Cutler and Reb Yehuda Leib Feuer. You all know by now that Reb Yehuda Leib Feuer may have been arguably the greatest gadol ever to live in the United States. He was the Reb Shlomo Palachek's childhood chavruta. They learned by Reb Chaim together. He was a gon sheba ga'onim. He knew kol ha'torah kula. When Reb Moshe Soloveitchik had a difficult question, Reb Leizer Suva had a pasuk in a difficult shaila, they all consulted Reb Yehuda Leib Feuer. Reb Yehuda Leib Feuer, believe it or not, where he lived and lived all his life in America, Holyoke, Massachusetts. And I told you, a member of the very first kollel class before most of you were born, grew up in Holyoke. Parents were in Shomer Shabbos. And then they would go to the cemetery to visit the graves of his grandparents. They would see this big monument, the Ohel, why do you say that in English, built on top of the grave. A mausoleum, you're saying?
Mausoleum.
No, I don't think that's right. Say that a mausoleum sounds like he's buried inside. He was buried in the ground. But on top, they built a place where you could pray, where you could, like the Lubavitcher Rebbe, you know how. So, a tent, I guess. There's no English word in my opinion. Oh, hello. So, he would ask his parents, what is that? Oh, that was a very great rabbi who lived in Holyoke. And he started getting interested. What does it mean, a rabbi, a great rabbi? And as a result, that is Rabbi Dr. Mark Wiener today, Kanaim Hara. And Dorot Yesharim, children here, children learning in Mir, children in the army, fabulous. Endless stories about Rabbi Yehuda Leib Feuer. So when Rabbi Aaron Cutler came to America, the whole world knew who Rabbi Yehuda Leib Feuer was. So Rabbi Aaron tried to get him involved after World War II. He's building Agudat Yisrael. He's fighting Yeshiva University. Rabbi Aaron going with his shita. So he invites Rabbi Yehuda Leib Feuer, you must come to this meeting of rabbis in New York, the Agudas HaRabbanim. And Rabbi Yehuda Leib Feuer comes in. It's a famous story. He's there 5 minutes and he walks out. He says, "Das ist nicht Torah, das ist politics. It's not Torah, it's politics." He couldn't do anything. His whole world was Torah. That's Shmuel HaKotin Shel Doreinu. That's Reb Chaim Heller. There was no, he was not Aguda, not Mizrahi. He was not Hildesheimer. He was everything. Everything, as long as it had to do with Torah. No one knew. His learning was unphenomenal. His knowledge of Achronim, his ability to deal with the Litvisher approach to learning, his knowledge of scientific Torah scholarship, his knowledge of languages, his doctorate in Oriental languages. Ugh, what that man did. That's why the Rebbe would only use the Sefer Mitzvah of Reb Chaim Kala. When he needed a bring our Sefer Mitzvah. You know, we always had a guy running up to the library. It's not like today. I have everything Xeroxed in front of me. I work very hard. It's not, no one gives me this a gift. But at least I have the Xerox. I can do it. But the Rebbe needed so. He has one guy always running up one flight, the Gottesman Library. Why? You have to see today. What is the Gottesman Library? It's still a library. They moved it to a different location. It's much bigger. And so he brings down a Sefer Mitzvah. Name, the Rebbe said, Nish, ich will not from Reb Chaim Heller. Only from Reb Chaim Heller, because he knew Arabic. And the Sefer Mitzvah was written in Arabic. So his translation, his footnotes, were what the Rav depended upon. So this was Shmuel HaKotan. He's the one who can write L'Maninim Al Pehi Tikva. No one else could write it. And what Reb Heschel is saying here, we can't have the masses determine tremendous, crucial issues in Torah Hashem. Only the Gedolei HaDor. So you see, he's dealing here with the nitty-gritty of the issue, which haunts us until today, but we're far from finished. And if Yitzchak says he's not entirely right, we're going to get next week to a part where the feminist movement went crazy, went berserk, because his language was so strong. And I'm going to show you the Rav's language was even stronger. It's amazing what I'll show you next week. So what do we do today? We're dealing with the whole question of Jaffa and innovation. And Porat, I'm never going to master people for Orthodox, Renaissance, and Torah. It's Porat, but in Hebrew it sounds good. Porat, fruitful.
Fruitful. The name of Porat,
of course, Rav Yisrael Porat was in Cleveland. He left a generation of Dorot Yesharim. His daughter-in-law just died. His daughter-in-law. She was
Rav
Levin's daughter, who married a Porat. Kanayin Hara. Tomorrow. Wow, oh boy, tomorrow, the trial, what went on, the family situation, the price that the Rebbe paid. I wouldn't miss tomorrow for all the Hasidim who were recorded and videoed on Shabbos in Meron by that Russian guy. A number of freebies. This is the Birchat HaShmuel. If anyone wants it, I had a Xerox, it sent it on to America. This deals with if you're allowed to go to college. It's the tshuva to Reb Shimon Schwab, and there's the whole analysis here of what Torah is about. It is a tremendous Lithuanian statement. So someone said to me, this tshuva you believe in? Well, you know what? They don't understand. When it comes to the study of Torah, man versus woman, the difference between, it's fabulous. That you have to go to college is a different story, but one can have both and not argue. This is about Parat. Let's put this out for whoever wants it. Everything we're talking about, Adina Bashalom, Rav Ovadia's daughter, has broken with Shas. And this is a very fascinating article of a girl whose father wanted her to be a seamstress, who's married off to a big Talmud Chacham and seems to have a very good marriage, and she breaks today with Shas for reasons you will see. This is not open to the public. One is for Avraham and one is for Yomo. This is about what we did in Russia. Okay? That appeared a few years ago in Makor Rishon.
What language?
Hebrew. This is about Meron. If anyone doesn't believe me, this is about how they recorded on Shabbos.
Then the head of Mossad?
But we were a separate branch that was only responsible to the prime minister, because the problems we dealt with were not security. It was Jews, keeping Judaism alive.
Education.
You couldn't have And we had an unlimited budget. Whatever we needed money for, we got. But it was directly from the Prime Minister. This is Mochach about the black individual who seems to know more Torah than 90% of the Orthodox Jews walking around with tremendous insight. If anyone's interested, it's a beautiful article. And here, the first word I learned when I came in Aliyah, started teaching in Michalah, I used to sit with some very bright girls, Rav Goldrich's daughter, Rav Kalman Kahana's daughter, once a week, and teach me words I know in English, but I don't know in Hebrew. One of the first words I learned was Rav Goni. It means multifaceted, multifaceted. Now, this is a new person, a Yemenite, who's now become one of the outstanding people in bringing people back to Yiddishkeit. He came from a frum home. He's not a Baal Tshuva. It's not like Amnon Yitzchak. He grew up in the Mamlachti Dati school system. Today he's in the Haredi world, but he's what I would call an open Haredi. Very fascinating to see his story. This is from Yom HaShishi, the newspaper that is paid for by the casinos in Las Vegas. The newspaper that saved the country, saved Yerushalayim, brought Olmert down. This is Edelson's newspaper, distributed free of charge all over the country. It's worth living in Israel just to get a free newspaper every day that has as many pages as the first section of the New York Times. I don't have to learn Hebrew, I have to learn English today. All right, you'll learn. Gentlemen, we are ready to daven Marav. I want to thank you all for coming and doing it again in health and happiness. Das v'danya. And Michael, please lead us in Marav.
Last one.